Good morning. This is Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. I am so happy to have in our studio a very dear friend of mine who is a phenomenal businessman as well as going to impart a lot of knowledge to us today, Mr. Paul Gerbino, who has just rebranded his company as Creative Licensing International. Paul, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Darrell. It's great to be here.
You know, before we jump into Creative Licensing International, it would be helpful for you to share with our audience, you know, a little bit about your education and background and how we came to know each other.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. My educational background was I was a musician and I was studying music in college. And I came to a realization at one point that I wasn't as good as I thought I was and realized I had to get a job. So I ended up starting out in the hotel business, where I eventually became a director of sales and marketing for a couple of 4 or 5 star hotels, buying a lot of advertising, got to know the publisher of a business travel magazine. He talked me into publishing. And here I have been in media for over 30 years. So it's been a really interesting journey, especially coming from the media world, where, you know, not only did I start out selling advertising, but work through to actually running publications and in 1998, building my first website.
Wow. Huge. And so we met, I guess we both served on the content board of the SIIA, for those who are not familiar with it, the Software Information Industry Association. And that's where a great friendship blossomed from. And
I tend to gravitate to very smart people. So they're all buttering up the interviewer. But the reality is that, yeah, it was SIIA. We were on the board of the content division, which now has gone through many different permutations, right? And, you know, it was probably the first time, because I was, again, a publisher at the time, the first time that I started to see my content as business information.
Okay.
Not just articles.
Right.
Serving the markets that I was serving.
Right.
But actually as information, right, that can be used by anybody who has an interest in the topics. So it was an eye-opening experience for me. And then being around, you know, people like you who understood that, I learned a tremendous amount around, you know, just understanding what my content could be in this environment of the information industry.
So tell us about the business that you're in, because we were talking earlier and yeah. I said, well, you know, you used to be a publisher. Now you're in the content licensing business.
Yes.
But you're helping publishers to further publish their already published information. Tell us about that.
Well, and it's funny. The focus of what we do is really based on a three-legged stool. And the original name of the company was Triumvirate Content Consultants. Mm-hmm. Though it was funny, we really didn't consult on content. We license content. And triumvirate was a word that a lot of people had difficulty spelling, including me.
Including yours truly.
Exactly. So it was time to change the name. And so really it goes to the principles by which I work and my team works, in that for content licensing to be effective, it needs to fulfill three points. One, it needs to be able to extend the brand reach mm-hmm. of the content, you know, owner, of the content creator, the author. It needs to be able to get their name and their presence out into the world. The second is that by getting it out into the world, they often find new audiences for their content. And when I talk about that, my first experience in licensing content, I was doing news on sludge pumps and flusher meters. Now, an engineer said to me, well, it's actually pronounced flushometer, but I said flushometer gets a lot more laughs.
Right.
Right. But if you ask me then, the readers of my content were people with grease under their fingernails, the manufacturers, the people in the workshops who were learning about new products to help them do business. And by licensing, I found patent attorneys, professors, a lot of other kinds of users pouring over this content, which made me realize that by licensing this content, I can find new audiences, right? And that's a third leg, a second leg. The third leg is revenue, right? You know, with a lot of publishers, they have content that sits in an archive that they're hoping gets some usage through long tail searches,
right?
But again, otherwise it's just sitting there. And if you can monetize that content, if you can get usage of that content that turns into new revenues for you, brand reach for you, new audiences for you, why not? So that's what we do. We help our publishers, content creators, to get their content out there into the marketplace.
And do you find, Paul, that sometimes they just haven't thought about it? It's just there.
It's funny. And if I understand your question correctly, I think a big part of what I do when I talk to publishers is educate them on content licensing, right? Because they're not thinking about it. You know, especially in the B2B space, they're caught up in the tyranny of the urgent.
Okay.
Right? And the urgent could be advertising revenues, can be subscription revenues, could be traffic to their websites. All those kinds of things that drive what they perceive as their bottom line, right? And it's very much a big part of what they do. But what, so that they don't think about incremental revenue.
Okay.
Especially incremental revenue that is so profitable because the content was already paid for.
Right.
For its primary use. That revenue coming in from content licensing falls right to the bottom line. So it is definitely one that you spend a lot of time really educating, especially in the B2B space, what content licensing is. Now, other industries like scholarly, they're more used to this kind of business model. But even then, they may be used to it, but do they understand it fully?
Right.
So part of our job is to educate.
And so with that, I mean, recently, you and I have had the opportunity of working together on a particular deal. But the vendor that I represent is new to the marketplace.
Right.
And which means that they don't really have subscribers yet, but they will.
Yes.
How do you manage the expectations of your clients to see the vision for it?
Yeah.
And the investment of their time to put their content up on new
things. So there's a couple aspects to licensing that, you know, when I explain to my clients what to look for, you know, or what to expect, their level set their expectations. And I said that there are some licensing deals that you'll do that will within 6 months produce revenue, right? There are others that are like mining gold, that you're going out there and you're digging a lot of holes until you find that gold vein, right? Wow. And so you look at the business model, like the one you're talking about, you look at their business model. Does it make sense? Does it have the right reach? Yes. That can expose the publishers or the creators' content in the right places? Does it, what is the potential universe of users of that model,
right,
and then you go in as a speculator, right, and you use content, you make sure that, you know, you put the right protections on the content so it can't be abused.
And what are those protections, Paul?
Yeah, so that's a great question. One of the biggest, we actually have a document that we call licensing best practices. That's an internal document that we use every time we do a contract. And we literally go through every licensing agreement and go through the checkoffs. Yep. Okay. Doesn't have to. Great. This is out. Oh, they have sub-licensing in there. All right. Well, who are they sub-licensing to? Where is the content going? I mean, I had a former partner when I first started this business who used to use a phrase, content gone wild.
Ooh.
Right. Okay. And think about it. When you have a ambiguous sub-licensing clause, it doesn't tell the publisher where the content's going, who's using it, how it's being used. And I once found, it was interesting, when we took over a client, we were doing some investigation. And when we talked to an aggregator, they said, oh, no, we're already getting that content. What do you mean you're getting it? Because
Me
they right.
neither.
And so we started to do the, you know, the trail, right? The money trail, a little forensic accounting. And we found that there's an original licensing agreement with another group
Oh my goodness.
that
Wow.
had sub-licensing in their in the agreement. And then you start to go, you know, you start to realize, well, geez, if I don't put a stop to that or
Yeah.
get some controls over that, it's
Right.
content gone wild.
Wow. And once that horse has left the barn,
It's hard to get back.
try to
It
get
is hard to pull back. You know, because the contracts themselves don't always allow for a legal route to force that aggregator to pulling it all back. Plus, once it's out, you know, you have no way of getting it removed from databases. I mean, the other best practice, you know, that we have is when an agreement ends, there has to be a purge of the content from the databases.
Right.
Right? Because again, you want to know where it is, how it's being used, and when. So,
Let me give you a case study.
oh, go for it.
Now, I'm gonna leave the name of the publisher out,
Go ahead.
but if there was a publisher that's been around since 2013
Okay.
and they have in their database 20,000 items, of which I think there's like 13,000 like articles, but the other 7,000 are different type of artifacts. And their information is global news that's translated from local language into English from a local cultural perspective.
Right.
Now, I know that previous conversations with another particular vendor, their hypothesis sounded great, but they just didn't have any content. What is the minimum number of articles you think is it represents enough to represent your time
Yeah.
to go pitch their service?
Well, and that's another great question in that, you know, when we evaluate a content creator. Do you know, A, can we help them,
Right.
right? And B, is the amount of work worth it on both sides, both for the publisher or the creator and
Yes,
ourselves? And
yes.
it's funny, we have clients that have one book, right? That we have done deals for, right? That was definitely worth it from both party standpoint. We have other, you know, clients that do, you know, 1,000 articles a year. That don't produce a lot because the topics of, you know, articles tend to be very thin and
Yeah.
don't have a lot of depth.
Right.
So it really, you know, it really stems from what we always say is you need to do a content audit,
Okay.
right? You need to audit what you have, not only in quantity, but with the quality,
Yes.
right? You can have a single book that can do gangbusters. Right. Or you can have 1,000 articles that does very little.
Ah.
It's really around what the content offers the marketplace. Right. Again, you know, you and I talk about this all the time with metadata and search, right? If your articles are thin, there's not a lot of content in them, and the metadata is thin, well, they're not going to be discovered. I don't care what platform you're on. Right, so what we always do with a client is we usually start off with somewhat of a content audit in developing descriptions for all their content assets, so
Right.
that they can look at it differently than they usually do. Right, most publishers don't look at their content through the lens of the value beyond their core audience. Right, and the other thing is these content description documents that we do, and it's literally we have a standard template for questions that we ask about a piece of content, a journal, a B2B magazine, a book, or whatever, that are usually the questions we get from licensees, right? And one publisher that we worked with was so happy with the descriptions that we did that every time they bring on a new employee, that's the document they hand them. Here, read this. It shows you exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it,
Right.
right? But again, that content audit is a very critical component that every content creator, every brand content owner should do on an annual basis. What did we, you know, A, what did we have? B, what did we add this year? Right?
Wow. So I want to switch gears a little bit. And ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Mr. Paul Gerbino, who is the president of Creative Licensing International. And the reason why I had to look at my notes, because for years I was saying triumvirate, content consultants, but now it's Creative Licensing International. So let's talk about AI. And what we're learning about ChatGPT and all of these AI tools is that they need information to build their intelligence about. Where does content licensing come into that? Because if someone is paying for access to your database, but then they're putting it into like a chat GPT, whatever the latest flavor is,
Yep.
and they're creating something new. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because I just posted onto the Society of Scholarly Publishing annual meeting website an article that had appeared in the Wall Street Journal. And the headline was this: chatbots are digesting the internet. The internet wants to get paid.
I love it. Love
Yeah,
it.
and here's the thing, it was funny. Since I started the business in 2015, I've been very aware that a lot of machine learning has been going on with publishers' content, both in front and behind the paywall. And but since 2015, I've been talking to publishers saying, guys, you need to be aware that there is scraping going on of your content, even behind your paywalls, and it's being used for machine learning, whether it's financial analysts on stock trades and wanting to know what industries are doing, whether it's media monitoring companies. And by the way, all this machine learning that's going on, they're making money on your content. Well, for years it fell on deaf ears because it was out of sight, out of mind. We weren't dealing with it. I've got the tyranny of the urgent. I don't care about that. It wasn't until ChatGPT and all the press about it, how it's learning on all the content on the web, did publishers finally go, wait a minute, that's my content they're using. I want to get paid for that.
That's
Right?
right.
So it has definitely been, ChatGPT was the tipping point for publishers to start being concerned and start being
So,
aware.
and so being that they're concerned, and being that they're more aware, I guess we probably will see publishers be more open to embrace these technologies and maybe invest in these technologies.
Well, I think it's a couple of things. One is, yes, a smart publisher will invest in this technology to help streamline their operations, whether it is to help young journalists who are writing their articles for the first time get an article started, to do research using it, because I think AI as a research tool is actually a great tool. I think that they'll look at streamlining some of the things they do today from an operational standpoint, and how AI can assist that, especially in the area of SEO and those types of things. I think from the standpoint of AI using their content, I think they're starting to say, no, wait a minute, we should get some benefit from this. And part of that is and one thing we don't have in this country, like for example, where media monitoring companies in Europe need to pay by rule, need to pay the publishers for use of that content, and they do that through collective, organizations, reproductions rights organizations, things of that nature. In the U.S., the laws aren't similar to the EU, so right now they're doing it a little bit unchecked. So, one of the things that we're going to have to do in this country is, one, we need to get the laws updated so that copyright means something. And two is, whether it is an existing organization or development of an organization, a collective rights organization, to, because it's going to be impossible for machine learning to do deals with every single publisher, right? Just too many of different sizes. I mean, if you're doing the New York Times, it's easy to do that deal. But if you're doing a small B2B publisher who has good content, well, that's just a lot to manage. But I think that it's going to be smart publishers are going to take advantage of the technology and also start to benefit from the use of that technology of their content.
Right. Wow. Wow. And so, Paul, your business, of course, is international.
Yes.
A majority of your clients, do they come from outside the U.S. or U.S., or is it like 50-50, third?
Yeah, I think, well, most of our clients are U.S.-based, though we have publishers in different countries. Mm-hmm. We are, international. So, again, really a lot of our licensing deals, mm-hmm. if you look at licensing, I put it in two buckets, wholesale licensing and retail licensing. Mm-hmm. Wholesale being your big aggregators and things of that nature. Retail being individual licensing deals with publishers in different countries or companies that do medical conferences that need content for those conferences, more that kind of individual type deals. The other thing too is we're not just content. I mean, we've done licensing for theme parks in different parts of the world, and wow. And yeah. Unfortunately, that one didn't work out, but we were very much involved with that, as well as licensing of brand, okay. Right? Because a publisher or content owner has a brand, and that brand alone can be licensed to an event in, say, India or Singapore.
Because it gives that event that credibility.
Exactly.
It's funny you should mention that. I just finished watching the movie Air on...
Yep, I haven't seen it yet, but yes.
And the guy who designed the actual first shoe, two things he did. He came up with the name Air Jordan. Mm-hmm. And then he saw the picture of Michael Jordan slamming with the legs.
Yeah. He
designed that logo. When you see that logo, you know that logo means champion. You know that logo means quality. It's amazing.
Well, and it's funny. I think whenever I get into a discussion about brand and I get into a little bit of a disagreement with the person I'm discussing it, I always go, I got 28 books on branding on my business shelf right now. because people don't realize the importance of brand.
Right.
I don't care what industry you're in. People buy from companies they know that they trust, right. Or perceived as thought leaders.
Yes.
Right. So whether it's in the industrial space, or it's in the consumer space, or in the scholarly space, a brand can have great power.
Yeah. I got a question for you. I was thinking, I know you go to the Charleston conference every year.
Yes.
Have you been approaching universities about they have so much different content that the professors create, and they got the institutional repositories. Have you found that to be a source of revenue for universities?
Yeah, I mean, we've done some work for some university presses over the years. And yes, I think that university presses can generate revenue for, their universities or even their own division to create more content and develop more. I think, again, for me, content, it whether it's university press or B2B or B2C, it's content. Right. It is information that can be used. And I often equate content like water, right? The information, the content will take the form of whatever container you put it in.
Yeah.
And I stole that analogy from Anthea Strategos from Outsell. Okay. Who taught me that in 2000. Oh my God, it must have been 2008 or my first Outsell conference.
Of course.
But it stuck with me, right? Because if you look at content as information, right, that can be crunched and manipulated and moved and take the form of any bucket you put it in, now you're no longer thinking, well, this is university press content or this is a newspaper content or this is, no, it's not defined by the bucket where it came from, right? it let it define itself in the use of by industry and by the
That's
marketplace.
a phenomenal point, Paul. Paul, you believe it or not, we're running out of time. I tell you,
Oh no.
time goes fast. I did want to ask you about what companies like Underline are doing with video content.
Yeah.
It's early days. What is your prediction
Yeah.
about video scientific conference lecture video content?
Yeah. So first of all, I think Underline's business model is a great business model. And you know, for spirit of full disclosure, I license some of my clients' content to Underline. I think that I, you know, the concept of creating a platform that is searchable, that is viewable, that can be licensed to libraries and, you know, universities for use by the students and professors and things of that nature are important. I think, you know, video content, we're doing a lot of work in that space, especially if you create transcripts on your videos,
Yes.
right? It creates a whole, it broadens out the usage, right? Both in discoverability with search, in the ability to translate. You know, especially if you have timestamp transcripts, you know, closed captioning could be used in China or other parts of the world in local languages. The other thing I think about content and why video and podcasts, by the way, are so important is everybody learns differently,
Yes.
right? Everybody has a learning style. You know, some people can read and learn, some people have to hear it to understand it and to digest it. Some people need the visuals to help them and hearing it to help them process it. So creating the different formats of video to get your inform or content to get your information out there, I think is critical.
Wow. And so what is your thoughts about the remainder of the year that we see here with ChatGPT? There's a lot of concern in scholarly publishing about authors who are creating articles using ChatGPT. And I recently saw a publisher, Anderson Publishing, add to their not disclaimer, but their rules that the authors must disclose if they use ChatGPT,
Yeah.
where did it reside in the article? Well, what are your thoughts about
Yeah.
authors using ChatGPT to create articles?
Yeah, and this really goes to a bigger, broader question about journalism and scholarly publishing, right? Somebody once said to me, just because somebody's an influencer or puts content on the web, doesn't mean that they're a journalist, right? And the reality is that a lot of very another gentleman, Frank Bellotto, who does work for me.
Oh
He's,
yeah, Frank,
yeah, you know, Frank,
360 guy.
a 360 guy. He said on a video of his own that, you know, if you were a mediocre or worse journalist, you got a lot to be worried about. If you're a great journalist, you don't. And the reason being is that one, people should know who's writing the article, so you should have a byline. And if it's AI, then the AI should be defined as a byline. Second of all, you know, again, if you think about the fact that that content from a chat GPT has been created off of content it's scraped off the web, so the attribution of all the places chat GPT got the information to create that should be at the end of every article, right?
Patience, right?
I'm telling you. So the point being is that I think, you know, ChatGPT is going to change the way we do business, especially in writing content. You know, I wrote my first press release on ChatGPT, right? Now I had to change it and I had to adjust it, and I actually gave it to Marie Griffin, who's a writer I work with, who's really great, to really make it look good. But if you know, it was good enough for me to get away with if I handed it to you, right? But I think that it's going to challenge scholarly journals, journals especially, because the ease of creating content, the barriers to entry of becoming a content creator has dropped tremendously.
Okay. Well,
So,
believe it or not, we are out of time. We're going to have you back. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Mr. Paul Gerbino, who is the president of Creative Licensing International, and he's my dear friend, Paul. Thank you for coming on the program.
Darrell, thank you very much for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up this week on Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. But remember, have a great weekend. But I want you to remember, leadership begins with you.